Welcome to Kingsway's weekly podcast. We hope this message blesses you.
To be loved by God, do you? It's cool. There's no like, what do you do? What job do you have? How do you dress? What did you do this week? It's just, hi Tony. And I don't know what people's perception is of me. I don't really know. But hopefully, it's some of it is that you think I'm quite happy most of the time. And I feel I'm quite happy most of the time. And but I've realised that my happiness is nothing to do with what I do or who I am or my job or no job or how I dress or my gifts or anything like that. They're like extra bonuses of having fun. But my happiness is irrelevant of my situation. And I try to live in that, I really do, whether things are going well or not going well. Because like I said before, I have gallstones, so sometimes that's annoying. And there's no cure. It's either I don't have small ones that can disappear, and the big ones, so I either get operated on or God heals it. But I just choose, that doesn't define me. I try not to say it that often. That's probably why I haven't told you that often. It doesn't define who I am. And neither does any kind of illness. It doesn't define who you are. And it doesn't destroy or change my relationship with God whatsoever. And whether my situation at home or anything is really, really fun and exciting, that also doesn't change at all how I appreciate God. And I think I've chosen to do that, and I realise that's how God sees us. And that's why I love that song occasionally. I couldn't get my head around that song when we first sang it. Not that I couldn't get my head around it. I like to sing to God, and he was singing back to me, and I used to find that a bit weird. But I just love it. It's like I see God like he sees me more. And I'm still learning, but to encourage you, that's how God sees you. He does care about what we do. He does care about what you do and how you are. In the same time, he doesn't. He's not bothered how things are going in your life. It doesn't affect how he loves you, in other words. But he's deeply concerned about everything about you, but it doesn't affect how he loves you. It's amazing, isn't it? The more you get your head around that, the more you just want to worship God and love him, irrelevant of what you're doing in your life. Sorry, I just went on my own little agenda there.
Thank you. Can I have that one? Perfect. What it should say is, read all about it, underdog defeats giant. Basically, today I'm going to talk to you about stuff that I've been reading about and see what you think about it. David and Goliath. I am sure you all know this story really, really well. Philistines, Israelites, having a big fight. There's a big valley and one army on one side, one army on the other. It was tense, to say the least. And then they send out this giant, 10 foot tall, into the valley, because it makes perfect sense, for the giant to go into the valley and say, if you can beat me, you've won. And we read this story, and then all of a sudden, in my Bible, it says, enter David. One of Jesse's sons comes along with his sling and defeats the giant that nobody thought could be beaten. And I've heard this story even before I became a Christian. I've known it. And I've always thought it meant underdog defeats giant. Therefore, God is on my side. Therefore, it's okay to be an underdog because that's what it is. God helps the underdog. Now, I have a problem with these slides because I can't remember what's on them. I read an awful lot of books, like an awful lot of books. And I read this book, David and Goliath. Now, he's not a pastor, and don't know that he goes to church or anything like that, so I'm not necessarily condoning it, but I think it's a brilliant book. Anyway, he says there's another side to this story, and it intrigued me. So we've always heard that it's David, 5 stones, kills a giant, job's a good one. But he goes, hold on a minute, this guy wasn't actually an underdog. Because at the time, there were 3 kinds of soldier. So you had your cavalry. Now, Sam should really be telling us this. Your cavalry, men on horseback or in chariots. Then you had your infantry, foot soldiers wearing armour, carrying swords and shields. And then you had your projectile warriors. Now, today they'd be called the artillery. But then they were archers and slingers. Sounds good. So this guy, Goliath, thanks to Team Hayes for this, he was an infantryman. He was girded. His loins were thoroughly girded with lots and lots of armour. He was huge. He had many, many weapons, swords, shields, the whole caboodle. And he's standing there looking very intimidating. Enter David. And David comes along and he says, why are you guys letting this guy get away with calling our God names? Why are you guys happy with this situation? I'm not happy with this situation. And he goes, gets his sling, and the rest is history. But the truth is, do you want to put another slide on, Nora, just see where we're up to? There you go. You see, but God. Next one. Right, so the truth is that David was more than well enough equipped to take on this giant, because it says in Judges that slingers could attack anything and pinpoint their aim to within a hair's breadth. David was an artist at slinging. He developed this art over many years, bears, wolves, you name it, while he was out in his field. And what he essentially did was he took a gun to a sword fight. A bit like this. Won the day. He was more than equipped in what he was a specialist in, but he wouldn't have been any very good at the sword. The thing is, it worried me, this book, because I was thinking, well, if David isn't the underdog I thought, what does that mean? Does that somehow change my perspective of God? And it did, but it made me think about it differently, and it made me realise that power comes in many, many forms. So I'm just going to go back a little bit to David's life. I've got loads of bits of paper that I'm probably going to get in the wrong order. Okay, so just prior to this event, Saul wasn't a great king. The people had asked for a king, and they'd got a king, but he wasn't really the best. So God said to Samuel, we're going to need another one. This is no good. And Samuel was like, I don't really want to be the one to tell Saul that he's no good. How are we going to do it? So it was all a little bit surreptitious. But God said to Samuel, go into this village, find Jesse, his sons, one of them is your man. Great, says Samuel. So he goes into the village all covert-like with his heifer. And all the villagers are a little bit wary because they know who he is. He's a man of significance. And he finds Jesse, and he finds all the men of the family. And he's like, great, God, we're on to a winner. These look like great-sized men. And God goes, not that one. And they're getting smaller and smaller and smaller and less kind of impressive-looking and kingly. And eventually, Samuel has to say to Jesse, is this it? Have you got only this? And Jesse goes, oh, well, there's the runt, but he's just doing the sheep. You don't want him. Well, bring him in. Let's have a look. And he's the one. And he gets anointed with oil. And Samuel leaves. And maybe you're all really holy and you all read this stuff and you know it all. But I just was reading this thinking, are you kidding me? Somebody comes into your family who's a man of significance in the town. It's like somebody coming into your family and saying, that child, that one there, he's going to be the next prime minister. And it's not just me saying it. God says it. Here's the oil. I'm off. And the whole family must have looked at that a bit strangely and thought, well, what do you mean? He looks after the sheep. He's not that important. He's not that great. It struck me the difference between David's family and Joseph's family. You know, you had Joseph going around like, oh boy, I've had a dream. You're all bowing down to me. Whereas David was like, right, you're out with the sheep again. There was no significant change in his life following quite a significant event. And it made me think about us. You know, sometimes we have promises, prophecies given to us. You can go to a church meeting, you can be healed of something. You might even go to a meeting where you actually become a Christian. And the world seems to tilt in that hour, in that moment, in that day. But you've still got to go back to work the next day. Or your physical life hasn't actually changed. Something huge has occurred. Something momentous to you. But it actually hasn't felt like anything's different. And it matters. It matters that we hold on to these promises because I reckon, no matter how his family took it, that David spent an awful lot of time with those sheep chatting to God and built that intimacy in that relationship. And he was probably saying to God, well, what does this mean? What does this look like? And that relationship deepened and it was all groundwork for what was to come. The other interesting thing about this story that I hadn't really realized is that Saul already knew David. Because what it says is that when David was anointed by Samuel, the Spirit of God entered him. And almost simultaneously, it tells you in the next chapter that the Spirit of God left Saul. And that left him quite prone to black moods, depression, anger. And somebody said, oh, I know a guy who might make you feel better if he plays his music. So David came along and played music to Saul. Now, when I think of somebody making play music that makes you feel better, I often think of Tom Hockley because he's brill and he can play anything. And, you know, but I know Tom as the music man. That's who I know him as. And suddenly, there's David appearing in your tent, the olden day version of Tom Hockley, going, I'll take your giant. And you're thinking, well, I know you're really good at music, but I don't really know how you stack up against a giant. So I'm going to go back a little bit because I've kind of gone ahead of my slides. So the next slide. No, the other one. So we've had these promises, but God says, long before we first heard of Christ and got our hopes up, he had his eye on us. He had designs on us for glorious living, part of the overall purpose he was working out in everything and everyone. So everything that's happening in your life, whether it feels like it or not, doesn't actually matter in a way because it's all working through for God's glorious purpose. You may have the moment, the significant moment, nothing might feel like it's changing, but it is changing. It's all working towards something else. So then the next slide. So David comes in, and my Bible says, enter David. And it's like, da-da, but I bet he just kind of went, all right. And it sounds like he was a bit of an annoying guy in the camp. You know, you've got all these mighty soldiers quaking in their boots. There's a big giant in the valley, and they don't know what to do. And this little guy is coming going, what's your problem? What's your problem? What's going on? And his brother's going, shut up, what you're doing here, in a brotherly way. And he goes, well, I don't see what the problem is. So he gets taken into Saul. Saul goes, right, okay, I see you. But I'm not impressed particularly. I don't see what you're going to do. Saul must have been incredibly desperate to have let this guy go out and fight this Philistine because the odds were quite high that he would fail in his eyes. And if he did, the promise was that the Israelites would be slaves to Philistines. So once he agreed to let David do it, he then said, okay, well, right, we better fit you up. We better get you with this gear on. We better put your armor on and da-da-da-da-da. And David was like, no, I can't move in that. I can't do that. And he went off as he was. In our lives, other people might have expectations of you. They might put you in a box or try and get you to deal with things the way they would. But God knows differently. The next one, Laura, please. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. For I know the plans and thoughts I have for you, says the Lord. Plans for peace and well-being and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. God's plans are better than ours. They're bigger than ours, and they look a bit different. Just watching you at the back there. So I've lost completely what I was saying on my piece of paper. I'm not very good at this thing. And then he went and he fought. And this book says, actually, it was a bit of an unfair fight as far as Goliath was concerned. What could Goliath do? He was carrying over 100 pounds of armour, and he was prepared for a battle at close range, where he could stand immobile, warding off blows with his armour, meanwhile delivering mighty thrusts of his spears. He watched David approach, first with scorn, then with surprise, and then with what can only have been horror, as it dawned on him that the battle he was expecting had suddenly changed shape. And that's what I think is quite interesting. What's my point in all this? The point of all this is that we all face giants in our lives. It could be illness, it could be depression, it could be little circumstances, it could be huge circumstances. We face them. And the world says that there is a way to deal with this, if you choose to deal with it at all. But God says, actually, what's really exciting is I've purposed you for this, and I know that you've got everything in you to still be victorious and to still be glorious. So, many books, I've told you. One of them is this, which I've just started reading, because I don't know if this ever happens to you, that sometimes you have a bit of a brainwave about something, and they're like, oh, this is quite interesting, and the next thing you know, people are publishing books on it. You're like, blimey, check that out. So, this is quite a good book. Giant Slayers. And then in this book, which is also about the life of David, called Rooted, he says that David grew in three different soils. He grew in the soil of intimacy, so in his relationship with God, as that grew, so that developed David. He grew in his relationship of serving. Despite being anointed, despite having this big cheese come and tell him he was the next great wave, he was still tending sheep. He still came in, and he still went and took the bread to his brothers. He still did as he was told. He was still serving. And he was also rooted in community. And see, this is such a quick sermon today. But basically, the point is this. We all face giants, but with community, and this has been a bit of a theme in some of the speaking that's been happening over the last couple of months, we are not on our own. We are part of a family. We live and breathe together, and we support each other in that. And it can be hard to be vulnerable to other people and to tell them what your giants are. As I said, your giants might be something really personal and close to you, but they might be something else. You might be seeking to change injustice or sex trafficking or debt or sexism or global issues. You know, God has made you, just you, to go and be the giant slayer in that particular circumstance. There are quite a lot of giants walking our world that I don't think should really be there. But we've to stand up and we've to say, no, I'm not having you mock my God. I'm not going to play the game your way. Let's see what God's given us to fight this giant. So can I have the next one, please? This is the truth. You were never the underdog. That's the point. David was never the weakest person. He was always significant. You are always significant. Building on what Karen was saying before and what you were singing in your worship, you know, God sees you probably quite differently to how you see yourself. There are world changes in this room, and that is so exciting. It doesn't mean that you have to change the politics of the world, but if you do, that's fine. It could mean that you're just changing your world, and that's amazing. That in itself is really important. You were built to slay giants. You are equipped to do it, whether it's exams, finding jobs, finding houses. The giants in your life, you're more than equipped to deal with. Our lives can be victorious and glorious for God. Not because we don't have problems or challenges, but actually because of how we choose to face them. It's kind of what Tony was saying before. He chooses to be happy because he's of his relationship with God, not because the circumstances in his life are perfect, but because of who he is in Christ. And that is really what I'm trying to say, that we are never the underdog, we're always empowered. But the plan is to go a little bit further and to get you to move about a bit. So this amazing creation, built specifically by Jonathan and Sam, amazing, we should give them a round of applause, is about to get pummeled. So we are in community. And what I want you to do is I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to get you to talk to somebody and tell them what your giant is. And then I want the two of you to come out and hit the giant. Okay? So I'm just going to pray. Okay. I want you to try and take this in for yourself, because I think it's quite an important declaration. God, thank you that you have uniquely and specially created me as a giant slayer. You've given me your spirit and your supernatural armor, and you've given me unique gifts and anointing. I don't need to be like anybody else to succeed. Instead, I need to be who God created me to be, even if that looks different from the norm. As I daily spend time with you, Jesus, teach me more about who I am and what I am equipped
for. If you're hungry for the more of God, if you want to be equipped to live the normal Christian life 24/7, see miracles, walk in healthy relationships, and discover Christ in you, then why don't you head over to www.idestiny.org.uk. iDestiny is Kingsway's five-month full-time ministry and discipleship school, starting both in March and September every year. For more information on Kingsway Church, please visit www.kwcm.org. And for more information about iDestiny, please visit www.idestiny.org.uk. Have a great day.